This is the IBJ podcast for the week of January 31st, 2022, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Just FYI, I am recording this on Friday, January 28th. At this very moment, it is 12:33 p.m. and I am watching the stock market. This is something I did a lot last year because usually the news was really good. I think you could say confidently that it was beyond anybody's hopes, given that we were slammed by two COVID surges, record inflation, and another year of supply chain disruptions. But by the end of 2021, the S&P 500 gained 26.9%, the Dow Jones gained 18.7%, and the NASDAQ Composite gained 21.4%. If you started 2021 with a nice nest egg in your 401k already, you probably finished the year doing the math, at least, on moving up your retirement date. Now, as I look at the stock charts for January, it is entirely a different story. The chart for the S&P 500 looks like one of those log flume rides at Kings Island. It's down 8.5% since the beginning of the year. The other major indexes similarly look like pine tree limbs weighed down by a heavy snowfall, which, not so coincidentally, is what it looks like outside my house right now. It is notoriously difficult to accurately divine why the stock market reacts as it does from day to day. But we know that earlier this month, investors were very anxious about what the Federal Reserve would try to do to put the brakes on inflation. On Wednesday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell confirmed that the Fed would have a more aggressive plan for raising interest rates, with hikes beginning in March. The Fed has kept its benchmark rate at 0% throughout the pandemic in order to encourage folks to buy things and generally keep the economy moving. When the Fed raises rates, it generally makes it more expensive over time to borrow money for a home, a car, or for your business. This obviously scares some investors, and then other investors see their retirement fund balances start to droop, and they get scared and start thinking about making changes, and it's just not pleasant for anybody. So I wanted to interview IBJ investing columnist Mickey Kim about the stock market's recent history and the Fed's decision, and hopes he could shed some calming light on all this. Now, he definitely believes that anyone hoping for another 2021 is going to be sorely disappointed, and that the market this year is going to be significantly more turbulent. You do need to have a guiding philosophy for your investing, and Mickey shares his in our interview. It likely will disappoint, or will be a disappointment to anyone who feels like they just have to make a change. Here's our discussion. I'm pleased to welcome to the podcast Mickey Kim, a managing partner and chief operating officer for Keir Marbach & Company in Columbus, Indiana, and one of IBJ's columnists on investing. Thank you for taking time today.
My pleasure.
Well, let's talk about the good news first. Though 2021 was a very tumultuous year, we had a contested presidential election, we had an assault on the Capitol, historically high inflation, continued supply chain disruptions, two major COVID surges. But despite all that, it was a great year for the stock market. S&P was up 27% or so. The Dow Jones gained almost 19%. NASDAQ was up 21.4%. So my first dumb question is, why? Why was it such a great year?
Well, Mason, you know, most investors love economic forecasts because our brains crave some sort of idea of what the future holds. However, markets are unpredictable, particularly over short periods of time, like the next year. As a famous baseball philosopher, Yogi Berra, said, it's tough to make predictions, especially about the future. So as you noted, last year was strong. After the S&P 500 had a total return of 18.4% in 2020, so 2 years ago, most market experts, and I use that term loosely, predicted more modest returns for 2021. I can tell you nobody predicted the S&P 500 would have a total return of almost 30% in 2021. And the primary reasons for the stellar performance in 2021 were operating earnings for the S&P 500 surged about 50% from the pandemic depressed levels of 2020, driven by higher revenues and record profit margins. Second reason was the Federal Reserve kept short-term rates low by leaving its target rate for Fed funds at 0% and kept a lid on long-term rates with its program of quantitative easing, which entailed purchasing $80 billion of U.S. Treasury bonds and $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities every month. So this rising tide of cheap, abundant credit lifted assets of all types, including stocks.
So we're going to get to Fed and interest rates in a second. I did want to ask, or I did want to note that, you know, so that was last year. For many investors, the stock market is very much a what have you done for me lately proposition. January has not been a great month. And why has January not been good?
Well, January has not been great because the Fed indicated a couple months ago that they were going to start removing these emergency measures that they'd implemented at the start of the pandemic. So interest rates would be rising and that they would be scaling back the program quantitative easing. As you noted, it's been a rocky start through yesterday, which was Wednesday the 26th. The S&P was down 8.7% year to date. You know, under the surface, there's been a change of leadership, however. Growth stocks have been primary beneficiaries of the Fed's keeping rates exceptionally low. So the S&P 500 growth index, so those are stocks, you know, technology stocks and the like, was down 13% year to date through yesterday, while the S&P 500 value index, so those would be stocks like banks and industrial companies, was down only 3.9%. So quite a divergence between growth and value. And by far the biggest losers thus far have been the stocks with compelling stories, but little in the way of profits. Those stocks have been obliterated. And just a couple examples, from the peak, Peloton's gone down from 167 to 25, down 85%. AMC Entertainment, 62 to 16, down 74%. GameStop, 347 to 103, 70% drop. Disruptive innovation guru Kathy Wood, money managers, ARK Innovation ETF, which I wrote about last fall in September, down 157 to 69, down 56%. And not to be left out, the cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin has gone from 67,000 to 36,000, down 47%. The entire cryptocurrency market has lost more than $1 trillion from the peak last November.
Wow.
So roughly four in every 10 companies in the NASDAQ composite have seen their stocks fall by 50% from their 52-week high. And, you know, Warren Buffett is someone we pay a lot of attention to. And his famous quote is, only when the tide goes out, you discover who's been swimming naked. So that's a bit of what we're saying right now.
So four out of 10 of the NASDAQ stocks?
Yes.
Are down that much?
So the indexes have held up relatively well up to this point. But there's been a lot of damage underneath the surface.
It kind of reminds me of, 20 some years ago, the dot-com bubble, where we had a lot of tech companies or lifestyle companies that weren't making a lot of money, but as you say, I mean, had a compelling story or a story that, you know, people easily understood.
Right. So, you know, the thing now is all these companies are going to be, you know, quote unquote, disruptive and change the way business is done. And those are all great stories, but making money is a different matter.
Yeah. I've got a message for Peloton. I just bought an exercise bike from Dick's Sporting Goods through the mail, and it was a lot less than Peloton's bike.
Yeah. So I think the bloom is definitely off the rose there.
Yeah. So as you mentioned the Fed, and here is where, I mean, even though I've been writing about the Fed off and on for almost 10 years now, I still get a little bit confused. Can you tell me, as if I am my six-year-old child, what is the Fed? Why is the Fed important?
Well, the Fed is important because it sets monetary policy for the country. You know, it sets interest rates, and their goal is stable prices and full employment. They attempt to achieve those two goals by monetary policy, which is with controlling short-term interest rates and other methods they may use to impact longer-term rates.
So what did Fed Chairman Jerome Powell say on Wednesday, and why was it so important?
You know, the Fed has been, you know, more than hinting over the last couple of months, the end was near for these emergency measures because the economy had recovered and inflation was stubbornly higher than their 2% target. So I think the last reading in December was 7%. At one point earlier in the year, there was a thought that the inflation was transitory, was the term that they used, and that it would eventually come down. But it has been stubbornly high. So yesterday, Wednesday, the Fed came out and said rates will indeed start ticking up, starting with the meeting, I think it's March 15th and 16th. And there will likely be a series of rate increases starting then, and that they are going to cease their program of quantitative easing. So they will no longer be purchasing bonds on the open market.
So how does that affect inflation? How is the rate hike going to bring inflation down?
Well, as credit becomes more expensive, higher rates makes credit more expensive, that will have the effect of dampening demand. Some pundit a while ago said the Fed's job is to remove the punch bowl just as the party's getting started. So that's what that is. So they're going to remove the punch bowl.
Okay. So things are more expensive, essentially.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's harder to borrow money to buy things. So there'll be less demand.
Right. So there'll be less demand out there, which theoretically brings down prices.
Which will, keep the sellers from raising prices further.
So, and regarding inflation, I think, demand has snapped back much quicker than anticipated, and supply has not kept up. So that's part of the equation of why inflation's so high. It's just, all these bottlenecks have still not cleared. And I'm not sure that there's a path for when those will clear, but until supply catches up, inflation's likely to remain high.
So the Fed is not then all powerful just by raising these rates. They don't necessarily have the ability to bring it down. They just can influence it.
Right. So it's a signal that they want inflation to come down, but they can't. They don't have a magic wand though.
And in general, I mean, from the investor side, rate hikes are scary. I would guess. I mean, that's the real problem.
They are. I mean, because they are the, they're the boogeyman behind every corner. But actually, there have been studies. So Credit Suisse did a study over the past four rate increase cycles, which were 94, 99, 2004, and 15. S&P actually gained 9.5% in the 12 months prior to the initial rate hike, and 26% over the subsequent 3 years, which isn't too bad. So I think, investors view it negatively, but the reality is stocks have still done pretty well in a increasing rate environment.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm. With more than 625 attorneys across 11 offices, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with the IBJ podcast. And let's get back to my discussion with IBJ investing columnist Mickey Kim about the Fed and what the stock market has done so far this year.
I know just taking the sample of yesterday and today isn't going to tell us a whole lot, but today the stock market is doing very well so far. And I think people are generally pointing to the effect of the news that fourth quarter GDP was higher than expected. So
right.
whatever concerns they had yesterday, they don't have them today.
That goes to the point of success in investing is tuning out all the noise, because there's noise every day and it's up to you what you pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And, there's always going to be a reason not to invest, but, over time stocks go up. So I've got another trick for you here, Mason. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you had invested $100 in the S&P 500 on January 1st, 1972, 50 years ago, stuck it in a drawer, just forgot about it. You forgot you had it. You never opened a statement. You never did anything with it. You had ended up with $4,668.61 December 31st of 2021.
So I didn't add a dime.
It went from $100 to $4,700. Okay, but if you're the type who, you know, watches MSNBC religiously and all the histrionics there, and you got scared out, you're the type who gets scared out because of COVID, global financial crisis, 9/11, or whatever, there's always something. If you miss just the single best day in each of those 50 years, so 50 days in 50 years, you would end up with only $787.66. So that's 83% less, just because you were trying to be clever and time the market. Right. So the message is, timing does not work. It can't be done, because you have to get the sell and the rebuy both right, and it can't be done on a consistent basis. So
the better investors are the ones who might have sensed that there was something going on with the market than this last week and tuned it out.
Tuned it out.
I can't tell you how many of my 50-some-year-old friends say regularly, when there's some sort of turbulence in the market, you know, I'm really seriously thinking about pulling all my money out of equities and stashing it somewhere else. I mean, it happened this week. The guy who sits next to me is like, I think tonight I'm just going to take all my stuff out of my 401k.
You know, this field of behavioral finance, it's valuable because it makes us aware of our biases. So at least we know why we're feeling the way we're feeling. So, you know, we're hardwired in our brains. There's a survival instinct that kicks in. This goes back to the time when we were, cavemen. You know, when things get rocky, we want to protect ourselves. You know, we are thinking, don't just sit there, do something. And I will tell you that doing something is exactly the wrong thing to do.
Because history shows.
History shows that investors consistently buy high and sell low. They buy when they're feeling good. They sell when they're feeling badly. And, they're doing tremendous damage to their long-term finances.
And history shows that if they just let it alone,
that's right,
it will accrue in value.
You would have had almost $5,000 versus $800.
Right. If there is, I'm talking to my buddy, and he just feels like he needs to do something, maybe switch to a different kind of fund or something. Do you have any advice for him?
My advice for everybody is, you sit down with your trusted financial advisor and you make a plan. And that plan is for all weather conditions, good or bad. And you stick that plan in a drawer. And when things get a little rocky, you open the drawer, you pull it out and you look at it and you say, oh yeah, we talked about that this could happen. So it's not a big deal. Volatility is part of being an investor. You know, last year was what I call a unicorn in that it was both high return and low volatility. You know, we only had 50 days all of 2021 where the S&P rose or fell more than 1%. We've already had six in the first 18 days of 2022. You know, that's one third. I think we got a little spoiled in 2021 by the return, high return, low volatility. That's not the way it is. Typically.
So we're going to be dealing with this perhaps for the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
A lot more volatility than we've had in the last year. And so we need to have industrial strength seatbelts.
That's right. Over the last 40 years, the average peak to trough drawdown has been about 14%. Last year, it was only 5%. So 14%, we've had 9% through yesterday. 9% is nothing. I mean, it's just part of the deal.
You're talking about just how the value of the market went down.
Right.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to get scared out of stocks because they went down 9%, you shouldn't be invested in stocks.
That is an annual occurrence, you would say, typically.
On average, peak to trough, 14%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
On average. See, a 14%. Yeah.
Over the last 42 years, average drop is 14%, but 32 of those 42 years ended up being positive.
Wow. So, we learned last year, maybe we learned for the 5,000th time. Predictions aren't worth a whole lot.
Correct.
But it is very likely that we will have a much more turbulent year than we did last year.
Yes.
So set it and forget it.
Sitting still is the most difficult thing anybody can do, especially when people are yelling at you to do something. But that's the way to go. That's how you make money.
Even though you look at the TV set and the TV set, hey, you just lost 10% of your retirement and you're supposed to retire in 5 years. And then your brain has to switch over to executive function really fast and go, trust me.
Right. I mean, because your survival instinct will kick in, but we need to overcome that. We need to understand what's happening to us, you know, physiologically so that we can mentally overcome it.
I assume that we should not, however, expect another 20%+ value increase.
Probably not. I mean, it could happen, but I kind of doubt it. As I said, earnings were up 50% last year. They will not be up 50% this year. Mm. That is a prediction I'm willing to make. You know, and then we've got, you know, increasing interest rates, COVID still out there. So there's a lot of issues out there still. So I would say your expectations for 2022 should be for more modest returns and higher volatility.
So I should be really looking at not 2022, but 2032.
That's correct. So here's a couple other facts. So the market is unpredictable, you know, particularly over the short periods of time. So now this is going back to 1926, which is, that is 95 years. Average calendar return over those 95 years has been 10.5%. So if I said, Mason, what are stocks going to do in 2022? You might say, well, if I guess, you know, 20% plus or minus around that average, that's probably going to capture most of the observations. So 20% around 10% is 8 to 12%. And then you might be surprised to know that in those 95 years, the calendar return between 8 and 12% happened exactly 6 times in 95 years. So point is, you know, average returns tell you nothing about what's going to happen over a short period of time. Absolutely zero. And then for rolling one-year periods going back to January of 1950, so that's 71 years, average annual return was 12.8%, and 80% of those rolling one-year periods were positive. However, the range around that 12.8% average was between minus 43.3% and 61.2%. So again, I go back to say, Mason, what are stocks going to do in 2022? I guarantee Mason's not going to give me a negative number, and I guarantee it's not going to be negative 43%, although that really happened.
Was that 2009?
I think it was.
2008, 2009.
Okay, so that's over the short term. So if you look out, say, I'm not going to worry about 2022, I'm going to worry about 2032, 10 years out. For those rolling 10-year periods, you get positive returns 97% of the time instead of 80% of the time. And the range is tighter from minus 3.4% to 19.5%. So the point being, the longer your time horizon, the higher your chance for a positive outcome and the tighter the range of outcomes there are. So in sum, stretching your time horizon from 1 to 10 years does wonders for decreasing volatility and the anxiety that you'll experience.
So I'm going to put this in a drawer for 10 years.
Set it and forget it.
Okay. Well, this is great. This is very calming information. I appreciate you giving me this kind of perspective.
Sure.
My thanks again to Mickey Kim. And just a reminder, his column on investing appears regularly in the print edition of IBJ, and you can find several years' worth of his work at IBJ.com. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories in the latest print edition of IBJ I want to point out. As we've discussed several times in the last year, it looks like remote work is here to stay. Indiana might capitalize on it by paying remote workers to move here. Emily Ketterer reports that state lawmakers are considering paying new residents who do remote work up to $15,000 in grants over 3 years. Also in this week's issue, Leslie Bonilla Muniz examines the prospects for developing downtown's Jail 2 and Arrestee Processing Center facilities. And Susan Orr examines the latest trend in the war to hire new talent, acquiring your competitors. You can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. It's a little bit easier said than done, but I can guarantee you access if you're a subscriber. And it works out to about $2 per week for all of the latest local news about business and politics, plus all of IBJ's data about the Central Indiana economy and corporate community, just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.